City, that's the United States in this honorable court.
Good morning. First case of the morning is Indiana Bell versus, who is it versus? There's a lot of people. Mr. Harrington?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. I will address the district court's finding that Section 252 of the Federal Telecom Act preempts the state commission orders here because they require SBC to make this remedy plan available as a so-called standalone document. And Mr. Steiner of the Indiana Attorney General's Office will address the finding that the commission did not adopt this plan pursuant to its independent state law authority. I'll first discuss why the district court's preemption analysis is wrong, and second, why this court's recent decision in Wisconsin Bell v. Bye is distinguishable here. The fundamental error that the district court committed is that it found this remedy plan preempted across the board and as to all competing carriers in Indiana, without regard to the fact that AT&T, MCI, and really many other carriers are already parties to existing interconnection agreements with SBC. By entering into these agreements, these carriers have already complied with the Act's negotiation and arbitration process. And these agreements are negotiated against the backdrop of ongoing state proceedings like this one, which the parties are all aware of. And it's routine for parties to reference those proceedings and even incorporate the results of those proceedings into their agreements. The commission here even made clear, though, that while it was adopting a particular remedy plan, SBC was perfectly free to negotiate a different remedy plan with different terms with any willing competing carrier, and the record shows that SBC did negotiate a different remedy plan with a different carrier, and the commission approved that plan. So the simple fact that the commission made SBC, required SBC to make this available as a so-called standalone document, doesn't interfere with SBC's ability to negotiate regarding remedy plan provisions, and as to carriers that already have interconnection agreements, it certainly doesn't allow those carriers to bypass the process. The preemption analysis the district court should have employed here is that was used by the 10th and the 6th Circuits in the cases that affirmed the ability of competing carriers to get access to tariffs or so-called standalone documents when that's allowed under the terms of their particular interconnection agreement. Essentially, the district court made a finding of per se preemption of this remedy plan here, and with all due respect, that is unsupported by the Act. It is perfectly appropriate for parties, for example, to incorporate the results of general state commission rulemaking into their agreements, and it's perfectly appropriate for state commissions to give parties like AT&T and MCI access to new services right away, so long as the parties are free to negotiate different terms if they choose. And under this order, the parties were free to do that.
What is the end result of the negotiations? It seems that Ameritech turned that down. That it didn't like this remedy that was brought under the 271, I guess, process for long-distance application.
The end result is that SBC did negotiate a different remedy plan with another carrier, and my understanding is that is the remedy plan that they have made purported to make available to other carriers for compliance with their long-distance application. Our view, however, is that the remedy plan adopted by the commission, as Mr. Steiner will elaborate, was done pursuant to its state law authority and really exists as an obligation for SBC under state law, irrespective of SBC's long-distance application. The SBC found that particular remedy plan was sufficient to allow SBC into the long-distance market, but it has said over and over that there's no one particular remedy plan that's required under Section 271. That provision doesn't limit the type of remedy plan a commission can order. And so our view is that order approving SBC's long-distance application doesn't really say anything about whether the commission's order here and the remedy plan it adopted here should be available to carriers who want to opt into this remedy plan. Let me turn quickly to this court's prior decision in Wisconsin Bell v. Bye. The court in that case held that the Act preempts state commissions from creating what the majority in that case found was an alternative method by which new entrants could obtain interconnection services from SBC. But the service at issue here is very different from the type of service that was at issue in Bai. In that case, the majority apparently believed that the services, so-called UNIP and EELS, could be used to provide competing phone service in Indiana without ever negotiating an interconnection agreement. But a remedy plan, that issue here, standing alone, doesn't allow us to provide any service. All it does is provide a means to ensure that SBC will comply with its pre-existing interconnection arrangements, which in most cases is through an interconnection agreement, at least in the cases of MCI and AT&T. So the tariff or the standalone document here can in no way be used to bypass the process and start providing competing phone service in the state of Indiana without first entering into some sort of an interconnection arrangement with SBC. I would apply here to prevent the commission from allowing carriers that would never negotiate an agreement from providing services. It clearly stands for that proposition. But the broad and really extreme reading that SBC is suggesting that would say that BI requires carriers with existing agreements to essentially restart negotiations and wait up to more than half a year, which is how long the process can take, to get access to a service that the commission has already spent years developing and found was important to promoting local competition, is really a blatantly broad and anti-competitive reading of that decision, and it's not compelled by the language of that decision itself. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, and Mr. Steiner will speak to the Attorney General. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Steiner?
Thank you. May it please the court. Of course, I'm representing the Utility Regulatory Commission in this case. It's our view that this performance plan was clearly based on state law. And not on Section 271 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. How do we know that? By looking at the order itself that implemented the plan. Particularly, if you look at Joint Appendix 72 in this record, it contains language from the Commission that explains that the Commission was acting under state law to regulate Ameritech's provision of services and facilities and quality of service. In essence, the performance plan is an exercise of the Commission's authority under Indiana law to assure that Ameritech is providing adequate services and facilities to its competitors in the local telecommunications market in the state of Indiana. It's correct, of course, that the Commission discusses Sections 271 and 251 and 252 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 in its order, but it does so because this whole matter arose in the context of Ameritech's application to get a recommendation from the Commission to the FCC to approve their long-distance service in the state of Indiana. And in fact, it was part of that process that we had a situation where Ameritech offered a remedy plan to the Commission. They were the ones who first suggested a remedy plan to the Commission. And as a result of that suggestion, the Commission asked that relevant parties attempt to negotiate a plan, and in fact gave some considerable time to do so. It was only after an ultimate agreement couldn't be reached that the Commission entered the plan.
But that was under the 271 process, right?
It was in the 271 process, Your Honor, but it was not based on 271 that they acted. They took advantage of the circumstance that they were in a negotiation with Ameritech and some of its competitors in the local telecommunications market to act under state law. And at the same time, it was acting as part of this process to make a recommendation. But it's very clear from the order that the Commission was not acting under the federal law, but was acting under state law. And in fact, throughout these proceedings, contrary to what Ameritech claims in its brief, the Commission has contended that it acted under state law, not under federal law. That's been a very consistent position throughout this, and given the fact that we have this intricate, detailed order from the Commission explaining what it was doing and why it was doing it and what authority it was acting under, the District Court ought to have given a little discretion to the position that was taken by the Commission in this matter, that it was acting under state law. It did not, and we feel it was acting contrary to Employers Insurance of Wausau, cited in our brief, as a result. It's also significant that the plan...
Why did the commission take the position that it was clearly acting under only state law?
The commission took that position...
Take that position right away, or...
Yes. We submit, Your Honor, that the commission took that right away. We submit that although there's a lot of language discussing how this matter arose in the 271 context in the order, that when you look at what the commission really talked about, it said it was imposing this performance remedy plan under state law, not under federal law. And it said it in the order, and right away in the district court, that's the position that the commission took. And it's continued to take now. It did so happen that Ameritech, because of the posture that this circuit has taken regarding reviews of telecommunication cases under TA 96, that we review the federal law, we're not reviewing whether state law was properly applied in the situation. Because of that, that issue wasn't even placed in front of the district court. The district court did not decide whether commission had authority under state law to act. The only matter that the district court decided was that federal law preempted any kind of remedy plan. And of course, that's the contention that Mr. Harrington was talking about, that federal law does not preempt any sort of remedy plan, even one that's under state law.
Could there be a remedy plan or some sort of, I don't know where, there's no statutory basis for a remedy plan. Isn't that just something that the state put together? I don't exactly, where's remedy plan stated in any law?
Well, it's not specifically stated, but it grows out of the commission's authority to regulate a public utility and also to make sure that public utility is providing sufficient proper facilities, etc.
Does the FCC, I'm sorry, does the federal agency have authority over a remedy plan that could be in conflict with the state?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The federal FCC has indicated that remedy plans can be implemented in a variety of ways, but it hasn't indicated that they must be implemented in all situations. So,
and you say, I guess, that there could be different ones for different...
For different states.
Well, even about different competitors.
Yes, there could be. And in fact, they could be negotiated or they could be created in this situation. In this situation, the commission was attempting to exercise its authority under state law to ensure that Ameritech was playing fair with its competitors in the local market. I'd like to reserve the remainder of our time. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Mr. Resthoven?
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please report? I think it's important at the outset to set the context for how this all arose and what is going on. This case arises out of FCC Indiana, formerly Ameritech Indiana's application for long distance authority under Section 271 of the 96 Telecommunications Act. That act opens up the long distance market to competition by the former Bell operating companies, explained in this court's decision in MCI Illinois Bell at 222F3rd. One of the requirements for 271 authority to receive long distance authority is that the applicant comply with the so-called competitive checklist involving access the competitors have to network and network elements. The FCC makes the long distance decision, but the state commission, such as the IURC here, in its role, to use this court's phrase, as deputized federal regulators or regulating on behalf of Congress, makes an advisory recommendation as to whether the applicant is meeting competitive checklist requirements. The IURC proceeding here was initiated for purposes of that long-distance application and the State Commission's non-binding advisory recommendation to the FCC. specifically involves so-called performance assurance or remedy plans. Remedy plans are simply devices by which one measures performance of the incumbent competitors by very statistical and mathematical means, and then provides that if those performance standards are not being met, there will be certain payments made to the competitors, or in some cases to the state or to its state commission. As you are aware, there is no statutory requirement for remedy plans. The FCC has repeatedly said there is not a requirement of a 271 application. What has happened in practice is that the FCC likes them. They like them as an assurance that once the BOC gets long-distance authority, it will continue to comply with competitive checklist obligations. And therefore, applicants have proposed them, and the FCC has approved them.
What if the company like Ameritech doesn't like it? You say the FCC likes them, but what if it doesn't like it? And who has the final authority to decide whether it's challengeable or...
The FCC is quite clear that a remedy plan is not a requirement. The applicant would take the risk of saying, if I am unwilling to agree to a remedy plan, the applicant would then take the risk that the FCC would say, we're not sufficiently assured of whether you will comply with competitive checklist obligations after you get long-distance authority, and therefore we're not granting you long-distance authority. But there is no requirement that you propose a remedy plan and no requirement that you agree to one. The FCC itself says, you know, whether an applicant would agree, as is cited in our brief, would agree to a remedy plan is something we have considered. Here, SBC, as part of SBC Indiana, as part of its desire for long distance, proposed various remedy plans. What happens, however, was that the IURC ordered, as part of this proceeding involving its advisory recommendation, ordered SBC Indiana to implement a different remedy plan, far more costly, far more expensive, and to do so now, which is why we are in front of this court.
Well, if that remedy plan weren't in place, I assume that the company would want something in place to ensure approval by the FCC.
Would it not? The company obviously made a decision that it wanted to have a remedy plan in place, which indeed was in place through a negotiation with another competitor, that the FCC would consider, and the FCC indeed did consider that remedy plan in granting the application last week. But in terms of what happened in this case, we are left with an order of a state commission directing us to implement a remedy plan that, among other things, doubles the base penalty payment level. And that order was entered as part of a proceeding where we are just seeking long-distance authority and the state's non-binding recommendation. This conflicts with, and it's preempted by, the federal act in two different ways, only one of which has been addressed by appellants. First, it interferes with and burdens the long-distance application process itself under Section 271, whose purpose is to open up the long-distance market to competition. Second, it interferes with and burdens and evades the Section 251-252 interconnection agreement process. Let me explain briefly how both of these things occur. One purpose of the Act, ignored throughout by appellants, is indeed to open up the long-distance market to competition. The process, the terms, the conditions, the burdens are set by the federal statute. One of those burdens, you have to meet the competitive checklist. That's in the statute. Another aspect in the federal statute, the State Commission gets to make an advisory recommendation. That's in the statute. What's not in the statute? The federal statute does not say that to get long-distance authority, you have to have a remedy plan in place imposing monetary payments and penalties. It does not say that. Nowhere does the federal statute say that to get long-distance authority, even the FCC has the authority to order such a remedy plan. The statute does not authorize state commissions in their advisory role to order an applicant to do this, which is what happened here. Now, we've heard about goals of the Act in the briefing, pro-competitive goals. What you have not heard in the briefing from the other side is what are the goals of the federal statute under Section 271. That goal is to open up the long-distance market to competition, and with respect to that goal, the action of the State Commission here is flatly inconsistent with that goal. It burdens the long-distance process. An applicant thinking that he will go for long-distance authority is obviously much less likely to do so. It is discouraged from doing so if it knows that if it enters this process, a State Commission may order it to impose a remedy plan involving costly payments and penalties, which the federal statute does not apply. even on the subsidiary goal, if you will, of checklist compliance, ensuring compliance with competitive checklists, the state action interferes with the federal method. Those methods do not include remedy plan penalty payments and provisions. This court has made, Supreme Court has made abundantly clear in the Gade case, in the Crosby case, that interference with the methods by which a federal statute is designed to achieve its goal is preempted. This court made clear 2 months ago in Wisconsin Bell that an interference with methods is a clear case for preemption.
How many states would the 271 application cover for long distance?
Fiscal 271 application I'll give you an example.
What is the present?
The one for SBC Indiana was on behalf of basically its Midwestern affiliates, if you will, the so-called Ameritech region states.
Yes.
So that particular FTC proceeding covered, I think it's 5 states, but I could be wrong, Your Honor, but it's Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, certainly.
Would there be a different remedy in each state?
There might be different remedies. There are, in fact, different remedy plans in each state. And the FTC order, which is one of these 270-page behemoths, talks about the remedy plans in each state. We recently submitted to the court their discussion of the remedy plan that they talked about with respect to Indiana. And the remedy plan, in each case, the remedy plan within the context of the 271 application is something to which the applicant agrees, not something that is ordered pursuant to the statute, much less by a state commission.
Was there an effort to incorporate an Illinois agreement into the Indiana scheme?
In the course of the discussions about what we might be willing to agree, different proposals were put forth. One of them had relation to the Illinois. One of them was related to the Illinois type proceeding. Yeah.
Is that similarly down here? Was the commission ordering?
What I know is this: out of the Illinois proceeding, the applicant. The key in all these is that the applicant ultimately, whether it, you know, you can agree reluctantly or not. You can agree because you want all business authority, even if it's got some things that you don't like in a perfect world. But what you can't do is order the applicant to say, to do something that says, I'm not going there. Or the applicant says, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do that as part of my long distance application. Nothing the Act authorizes even the FTC to do that, much less a state commission. I'd like to move, if I can, to the 251-252 preemption and specifically address. Mr. Hamilton has offered what is effectively a new argument that has been raised for the first time in a submission of supplemental authority, which is that we distinguish the Wisconsin Bell case on the grounds that this case, unlike that one, involved people that already had remedy plan agreements. We will submit at the court request. Certiorari has now been filed in Wisconsin Bell, and I just yesterday received, got a copy of the certiorari petition filed by Mr. Hamilton's firm in that. And among other things, it says the Seventh Circuit decision is destabilizing because of interconnection agreements which we have around the country. Quote, these include MCI's interconnection agreement with FTC in Wisconsin. So the notion that there was not an interconnection agreement existing in Wisconsin Bell, and therefore that is the basis for distinguishing that, is incorrect. I would also point out that even with respect to existing interconnection agreements, there are tremendous ways in which you are still interfering with the federal process for negotiating interconnection agreements. First of all, you are changing existing negotiated terms. Remedy plan provisions are often in the context of the interconnection agreement process. These are topics of negotiation. If you establish a plan that is available to everyone, whether they have an agreement now or are going to have an agreement, and you say you can just opt into this, you have changed the existing interconnection agreement, essentially providing an option to the competitor to say, I'll take that one instead of the one I negotiated. Second, even with respect to existing interconnection agreements, these do not have indefinite terms. They expire, or they're renegotiated. If you have established on a standalone basis available to anybody simply by opting in through a process that does not involve negotiation, and you have then, just as in Wisconsin Bell, you have established a baseline from which negotiation proceeds. You have said it won't be any worse than this, and you have done so in a process that is completely outside the federal interconnection agreement negotiation process, which is the clear preference of the Act, the cornerstone of the Act. Second, other competitors have under Section 250, I believe it's 252I, have the ability to make them available to themselves provisions that are in someone else's agreement. So if, even with respect to people with existing interconnection agreements, if you give them the ability to opt into this new, to take this new remedy plan, it then becomes available to everyone else as well. So the notion that there is some distinction here, and again, this is a new argument we are seeing, distinction between whether this involves people with existing interconnection agreements or whether it just involves this new entrance, does not work and does not change the preemption analysis.
What is the duration of a so-called remedy agreement then? Is it based on the agreement?
An interconnection agreement may have different terms. It may have different periods of time. You know, and it will vary depending on what you negotiate with a particular party. The remedy plan provisions of that, if they're included at all, and that's another preemption problem here. Interconnection agreements may not include remedy plan provisions. By making them available, ordering and implement, as the state said, you've essentially taken off the table the whole issue of whether there will be a remedy plan in your interconnection agreement. Now that's decided for you by the state action. But the remedy plan provisions of a particular agreement would presumably be coextensive with the term of the agreement itself. And when it expires, you have to renegotiate them. I want to take briefly, very briefly, Mr. Steiner's discussion that the state was acting under state law here. Ultimately, it does not make any difference for preemption analysis. We have pointed out that the state was not doing that, in large part, candidly, for fairness to the district court, because the district court has been accused in briefing here of misperceiving the preemption issue. Chief Judge McKinney has been accused of not understanding and not paying deference to what the state was, quote, really doing. Let's look what the state was really doing, just briefly, based on its order. The second sentence of the order, and it's quoted at page 13 of our brief, this is a proceeding under Section 271 of the Telecommunications Act to evaluate whether FCC Indiana should be allowed to offer long-distance services. If you look at page 14 of our brief, and this is quoting the order, this is the commission's own words. It is obvious that the IURC's investigation into FCC Indiana's compliance with Section 271 is not a traditional proceeding, but rather an implementation of federal law as contemplated by Indiana law. What then does the State Commission say about its order itself in this proceeding? The commission order as a result of this docket will not be a final action, but a recommendation to the FCC. This commission was never purporting to conduct some independent state law remedy plan proceeding in the shadows of this 271 application, and it materially distorts the preemption issues. And it's unfair, I must say, to the district court to pretend that the district court missed something here or mischaracterized what the state did. The bottom line is simply this. With respect to Section 271, you have a federal process that sets forth the requirements that you have to meet to get long-distance authority. Now including requiring monetary payments and penalties. The State Commission ordered that here, even though it has only an advisory role. With respect to 251, 252, you have a detailed process for negotiation between competitors as to what terms of those are going to be. Here, the state ordered, with respect to an important topic of that, that these will be the terms available to anyone on a standalone basis, independent of the 251-2. On the Wisconsin Bell, that is patently preempted. Thank you, Your Honor, for your kind attention.
Thank you. Mr. Harrington.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Russell actually said it quite correctly. Section 271 of the Act does not require a remedy plan, and it also does not limit the type of remedy plan a state commission can adopt pursuant to state law. If anything, the commission engaged in an extensive discussion of this issue, and the fact that everyone understands that federal law doesn't require this buttresses the concept that the commission understood it was acting under state law. Mr. Rusthoven says that all the commission can do here and all the commission was doing was issuing a non-binding recommendation. In fact, if SBC had opted to withdraw its application for long-distance service, this remedy plan would still have been effective. They still would have been obligated to comply with this remedy plan as a result of the commission's jurisdiction over local phone service, not over their long-distance application. We've cited the provisions in our brief and our joint appendix where the commission discussed its authority under state law and said we're adopting this to help Ameritech comply with its state law service obligations. Could this order have been drafted better? Absolutely. But this court said in Illinois Bell that federal court review of these types of orders is strictly limited to determining whether there has been a violation of the Telecommunications Act. Federal district courts, with all due respect, should not be in the business of second-guessing state commission interpretations of their own state orders based on state law under that limited scope of review. And so, again, with due respect to the district court, the commission has maintained that position consistently. We've cited the points in our brief in which it made that argument in the district court. We think its orders can perhaps fairly be read either way, but under that scenario, there should be some deference to the commission's reading of its own orders. With respect to the buy decision, yes, we submitted that as a supplemental authority because the decision came out after briefing was complete. The point of the distinction between buy and this case is not whether we do or do not have an interconnection agreement. Do we believe buy was wrong? Absolutely. But the tariff at that case and the remedy plan in this case are different types of services. The majority there apparently believed you could use this tariff and never enter into an interconnection agreement. You cannot use this remedy plan without entering into an interconnection agreement. And neither MCI nor AT&T nor the vast majority of carriers in the state of Indiana are trying to do so. By certainly prevents any carrier from trying to completely bypass the negotiation process and obtain services through what that majority found was the alternative method of interconnection. But we haven't bypassed that process. We have an interconnection agreement, and whether we can get services from Ameritech and get access to this remedy plan should not be determined by some exceptionally broad per se finding of illegality, but rather by interpreting the terms of our agreement. AT&T, for example, would take the position that its agreement specifically references this provision and specifically incorporates the results. And the point is, if SBC disputes that, which they have every right to dispute, that should be decided under the procedures this court approved in Illinois Bell by the commission as a function of interpreting the interconnection agreement, with that subject to federal court review. And so the concern the buy majority had about federal court review of state commission's orders really is preserved here, because the commission can interpret this agreement and that decision is subject to review in federal court for compliance with federal law. So do we believe the buy decision was wrong? We do believe the buy decision was wrong. We respectfully submit, as we said in our authority letter, that it should be overruled. But the decision does not compel the broad and expansive and really extreme reading of the Act's negotiation process that SBC is advocating here. We have complied with that process. AT&T has complied with that process, and lots of other carriers have. And we should not have to restart that process to get access to a new service that would slow local competition considerably. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Is there any time left? Apparently the time's expired for the rest of the thing. So this case will be taken under advisement. We'll move on.